Thank you and good morning. I'd like to talk to you about an emerging pest in southeast United States right now, Pachycnidella chinensis. A little background on the information. It is a subfamily is Panurinae, which is a primitive group of ants. The ESA, a common name, has been established as the Asian needle ant. In the U.S., colonies range in size from a few dozen to several thousand, whereas in Japan, colonies tend to be a little bit smaller. Here's a map of its native and non-native areas. If you look at the blue circles, ovals, that's areas indicated that as putative native area of distribution, whereas the yellow regions are areas that we're finding it out of its native area. It is an inventive ant, but it's up in the air whether or not we can consider it an invasive yet. So in southeast United States, it was first reported in 1932 in Decatur, Georgia. These purple areas indicate where it was originally established back at that date. We're guessing that it was probably established in the early 1900s on plant shipments coming over from Asia, since there has been some precedence of aphis intercepting this species on its way into the United States. Currently, it's established in all the areas that are colored. It is medically and ecologically important, medically in the sense that it can sting and cause anaphylaxis. We have cases of this in South Carolina as well as overseas. And it's ecologically important in that it's pushing out native beneficial ants in where infestations occur. So my research goals using this species has been to determine the mating frequency of the queens that are found in the colonies, and we're using microsatellite markers as an assay to do so. But I was also looking at the genetic diversity within specific colonies, and then comparing one colony that is close to another to a colony that is far apart, trying to answer questions about their unicoloniality status. So we do know that there are multiple queens in the system. A colony can be composed of 18% queens. The rest would be workers or males. Individual queen reproduction is unknown, and that was what spurred this whole question. So I'm using microsatellites, which are small segments of highly repetitive DNA. They are often used in population studies because they change frequently from generation to generation because they are so repetitive. And down here I have a typical analysis output of two alleles that would come out of a sample in an adult queen. I guess they're all adult. So four microsatellites were used for this research. They were designed for a closely related species but different, Pachycnidella elutipes. In the reports, they were found also in P. chinensis, hence the reason we used them. For just informational purposes, this is what the microsatellites look like on paper. The primer sequence, the size, if you note the size, they're within about 150 to 300 base pairs, give or take. So these are pretty relatively small segments of DNA compared to, say, a coding gene area. I'm currently mapping out the allele ranges in our area down in South Carolina versus what was published in Japan. They are similar within the same range, but the alleles are slightly different at some loci. So our question was to look at multiple mating because some ants may mate once or multiple times, and no one has done anything similar in P. chinensis. Here we have a picture of P. chinensis sperm. So 9 field colonies were collected and returned to the laboratory where the queens were isolated. They were identified by morphological characteristics. I extracted the sperm that is stored in the spermatheca of queens located at the junction of the ovaries. A spermatheca is an organ that stores the sperm of males for the duration of the queen's life. Dissections were conducted on 38 live queens. They had to be live since preservation in alcohol would cause dehydration of the organs. So here are a couple pictures of what the spermatheca look like. They're pearly white in color under reflective light. They're about 2 millimeters wide, a very small organ which had to be isolated all by itself without any contaminating tissue. So a typical dissection was done by eviscerating the queen by pulling the sting in one direction and the petiole from a different direction. This is a typical disembowelment. You can see here the spermatheca, how large it is compared to the last tergite and the sting. Malpighian tubules, midgut, and ovaries can be seen here. Interesting note, if you see the brown in the ovaries, that is the yolk that's developing in the eggs. That's how I know that this individual was fertile. So to dissect that organ out, it had to be teased out really carefully with a Minuten pin. It was really important that I used this kind of design to remove the spermatheca from the dissecting medium, which was water. The surface tension of water made it very difficult to get the organ out of the petri dish during dissections. With this here tool, I found a way to get the spermatheca contained in a single drop of water as it was removed from the dissecting medium. And then separately, I took the head and thorax for different analysis. So DNA was isolated from the sperm in the spermatheca, so the whole organ was put into the samples. The queen DNA was isolated separately as a control to look for contaminations of the queen tissue with the sperm tissue that's found in the organ. And then standard PCR was originally employed, and then I moved to touchdown for more specificity. So to actually use this assay, we looked at the number of DNA fragments that were present in a sample. So if you're familiar with male social hymenopteran, they're haploid, whereas the queens and workers are diploid. So a single mated queen DNA from the sperm should produce only one microsatellite region or a single band. But if she has multiple sperm contributors in the spermatheca, she would have multiple bands. And here's an example of such a case. Above we have a queen body only, below we have the spermatheca only. On the x-axis we have the size of the microsatellite coding region or region and base pairs, and along the y-axis we have relative amount of DNA that was found in the sample. So in our queen we found the two alleles at 226 and 229 base pairs, and there was no corresponding contamination in the sperm sample, so I could justify this sample as being non-contaminated with queen tissue. And then once I look in there, it itself has at very low levels, because the tissue of sperm is a lot less than the tissue of the queen, two base pairs or two alleles at this loci or locus at 226 and 237. So this would be a positive sample. So my results show that DNA was successfully isolated from only 14 of the 38 individuals. DNA was isolated from the head and thorax 37 out of 38 times. There's much more efficient isolation with the more tissue. Multiple inseminations occurred 5 of the 14 cases, and sperm samples were contaminated with queen DNA in 6 of the 14 samples. So sperm DNA was isolated from 37% of the spermatheca compared to the 97%. I tried concentrating negative spermatheca samples, but that yielded no increase in PCR product that was done with an alcohol precipitation. Touchdown PCR did significantly increase the yield of DNA, but not in negative samples, obviously. And then the loss of sperm DNA in these other samples was attributed to low tissue volume, possibility of collecting a virgin queen, and then loss of tissue during the dissection process, which wasn't uncommon. Contamination of the sperm DNA with the DNA was high 43% of the time because PCR selects for the most abundant DNA in a sample. Much more starting tissue in the queens than the sperm. That convoluted my results. Now, the molecular evidence suggests that multiple inseminations are possible. In my case, 36%. I project this is a gross underestimate of the true mating frequency since I had such a low sample size. I was working with such small, minute amounts of DNA, and then just the high level of queen contamination was hindering a lot of my ability to see what was in the samples. Further testing is needed on larger sample size, and also we plan to use some arena style mate choice studies to get some behavioral data. And in conclusion, the knowledge of the Asian needle ant queen's mating strategy provides insight into the population dynamics and colony development of the species. At this time, I'd like to acknowledge my faculty, the staff, and funding that has allowed me to do this research, and I'll take any questions that you might have. Yes?
Do you suppose that multiple matings are occurring at the time of flight or after the female, it's been inseminated.
The question was, when is multiple insemination probably occurring? I believe, from just my personal observations, that the matings are occurring when the males leave their home nest and come to the home nest of females. And inside that colony, what's going on exactly, I don't know. I think the reproduction is happening before the wings are lost within the queen's home colony before she disperses. But this is just personal observation. I have no data to back that up. Any other questions? Yes?
With your work, can you tell if there's more than two individuals in this multiple mating, or one versus more than one?
The question was, can I detect more than two genetic contributors to a multiple insemination? No. I had problems enough just trying to find two individuals. Ideally, at some point, I would be able to maybe get three, but not at this time, no. Thank you for your time.
Let's give a round of applause to all our student presenters. I think they did an excellent job.